John Hamilton, Robbie Caron, Hani Massoud, Trina Dorote, Maria Studio, and Libby Rainey. Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, engineer. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Julie Crosby, Renee Feltz, Dennis Moynihan, and Aaron Dooley. And to our crew here at Park City TV, Danielle Turner, Robbie Johnson, Diego Romo, Brendan O'Leary, Kristen Parker, Yudibia Barrios, and Jacqueline Daly. To see all of our broadcasts from Sundance, go to democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman from Park City, Utah. Thanks so much for joining us.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meetings policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The Finance Committee meets the fourth Monday of every month at 4:30 p.m.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the third annual Christopher Kalonji Angelversary on Monday, January 28th from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Concord Elementary School in Milwaukee, Oregon. Christopher Kalonji was killed by two Clackamas County Sheriff deputies 3 years ago on January 28, 2016, in the apartment across from Concord Elementary School. The Angelversary event will light candles at 11:20 a.m. and share stories of his life and of other loved ones lost to police violence. Again, that's the third annual Christopher Kalonji Angelversary on Monday, January 28th from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Concord Elementary School in Milwaukee, Oregon. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And you're listening to KBOO Portland. Up next is More Talk Radio.
Good morning. Today is January 28, 2019. You are listening to More Talk Radio on your community radio station, KBOO-FM. I am Cecil Prescott. 90.7 FM in Portland, 91.9 FM in Hood River, 104.3 FM in Philomath, and KBOO.FM on the World Wide Web. And again, this is Cecil Prescott, and welcome. You are listening to More Talk Radio. Let me give you our phone numbers for your opportunity to join us shortly. Our numbers here in the studios are 503-231-8187. Now, for those of you who had the opportunity to listen to Democracy Now!, you know, I just feel like I need almost a shower after hearing that conversation with the director of Where's My Roy Cohen, Matt Turnauer, who was talking about the film Where's My Roy Cohen and drawing the connection, the dots, if you would, between Roger Stone, Roy Cohen, Joe McCarthy, and the President of the United States, Mr. Trump. And it just, it just feels so ugly. But I'll get over it. It's just a reminder, at least, that how much work we have to do to transform our society and our politics one to one in which that which is honored is not trickery and dirty tricks, but an attitude of respect for people and treating people and movements with a certain, I'd say it, respect, but to honor people for who they are. There's certainly a way to play the game of politics, but I guess one thing we must discover for ourselves is how we want to be. The director of the film, with my Roy Cohen, Matt Turnow, in that interview, referred to the type of person Roy Cohen was and the type of way in which people conducted business, transactional, he used the word. And that is so much, I think, a part of the problem that we as a society find ourselves in. Transactional, and rather what I can get for myself, rather than looking for the best and what is deepest within individuals and movements, and try to move beyond ourselves to something better. So hopefully we'll have conversation with those of you who are a reflection of our better angels, as it were, and not to descend into the messiness of what I find is troubling in too much of our political dialogue. Again, this is More Talk Radio. I am Cecil Prescott. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. Celeste is caught in the traffic, but she will be here shortly. And part of our conversations today is not only to talk about Roy Cohen, but about what we've discovered in recent days about how we live in our society. So certainly I heard the remarks of one former a retired news anchor talking about I want to quote him accurately, but in part where he talks in part about how immigrants, and I think he refers in a very broad sense, I think, in Hispanics, which that's a whole other discussion. But in fact, that people should assimilate to the American culture. Celeste has some other choice selections of recent comments about this this thing in our society where the other is something terrible. And but more of that later. Again, our numbers are 503-231-8187. I hope that's right. I saw, saying numbers. But there are a couple of callers online. Cody has been waiting. Good morning, Cody. Hello? Maybe not. Let's see if is Lou available. Oh, we seem to be having some problems with our system here. But again, as we work out the kinks, be willing to join us with your conversations and your thoughts, 503-231-8187, and we'll talk about things. Let me just read briefly while we work out the kinks, the remarks of the journalists on Meet the Press yesterday. Tom Brokaw was talking about the U.S.-Mexican border, and this is Tom Brokaw speaking. I'm quoting him. He writes, he says, on the Republican side, a lot of people see the rise of an extraordinary important new constituency in American politics, Hispanics, who will come here and all be Democrats. Also, he continues, I hear when I push people a little harder, well, I don't know whether I want my brown grandbabies. I mean, that's also a part of it, Tom Brokaw observes. It's the intermarriage that is going on and the cultures that are conflicting with each other's. Okay, now that's an observation. It's not necessarily Mr. Brokaw saying what was how he felt. But he continues. He says, I also happen to believe that the Hispanics should work harder at assimilations. That's one of the things I've been saying for a long time. You know, they ought to not be just codified in their communities, but make sure that all their children are learning to speak English and that they feel comfortable in the communities. And that's going to take outreach on both sides, frankly.
Frankly.
Oh, boy.
Well, you know, Tom Brokaw was a man back in the day who I looked to as one of the pillars of journalism, especially when I was in journalism school. And he was younger then, too. You know, and there were certain folks that you looked to help you steer a clear course in journalism. You know, you weren't supposed to be partial. You were supposed to be level-headed, but ask the deep questions. Yes. Remember what it's like to be the little person if you rise to fame, and especially use your position for advocacy and for the good, and to, at all times, have decency. To paraphrase, you know. But now I look at him, and the first thing I want to say is, people don't worry. He's not the boss of us. The second thing I want to ask is, to be very honest, what is American culture other than a voracious hodgepodge, a voracious liar and dishonest creature in that it absorbs everything out of everybody else's culture, transmogrifies it into something that still resembles it but has the American stamp on it, and then tells people that's how we should behave. Oh, and has very little roots in reality except for the things that it takes from other cultures. Okay? Da, da, da. If American culture is thrifty, there are not many surviving cultures on Earth that are just flagrant with resources. I can think of one culture, and it was a vast culture that held sway for a few years. That was and I'm trying to, you know, get where I am with this.
Okay.
Nazi culture.
Mm-hmm.
Burning books, pillaging riches, destroying culture, but keeping all of the icons and the art, you know, that was profligate. Yeah, that's a big word for Monday, I know.
Oh, God. The words
profligate.
We use at 8:12 in the morning. This is More Talk Radio on KBOO. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. We're going to try our phones again, and let's see what Coley has to share with us this morning.
Good morning.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay. Cecil and Celeste, it's been a while.
Well, you're here now. I'm glad.
Well, Cecil, you're talking about how the politics behind what we were both listening to this morning at the Democracy Now! Was making you sick, correct?
Yeah, it was.
Well, it should.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of what the gentleman who was talking about Trump and his connections to these people like him should have been put at the forefront at all of this in the beginning. But instead, everyone used the pretense of Russia. And I think that was very disingenuous of a lot of people to do it, instead of going at the heart of the situation. And I have to ask myself, why did they do that? Why did they operate off of false pretenses instead of just talking to us like adults? Mm-hmm. And I dare say it's because if that made you sick, His political detractors will probably make you sick too, because the corruption's probably that bad. Mm-hmm. And making a direct connection to the class of what do we call them? Reporters, journalists.
Yes.
Well, we hope they're journalists. We hope they're journalists before they're reporters.
Well, we need more investigative journalism, and we're not getting it.
No, we're not going to get it.
People are starving for truth, mm-hmm. which is why they're getting 2/3 of their news from the internet. I, for one, have to listen to both liberal and conservative types.
Yes.
Just so that I can get some stereoscopic view of what's going on. Mm. Because we're all in the middle of a propaganda war, and it's a rather hot one.
Well, Cody, I would say even if you do try to listen to conservative and liberal, or ever how we want to phrase them or name them, you're not getting stereoscopic. Not really. You're still getting the monoscopic. It's just the angle is changed, I would say, up and down, vertically.
Well,
you know, because we're thinking we're seeing something on the extreme right and left, when the extreme right and left are really the same thing.
Well, this is where I have to agree with you. It's just that both ends give away certain small things away.
Yeah, yeah.
If you pay attention.
Yeah, that's true.
What's going on. Which is why I really believe why the left went after Trump under false pretenses, mainly because their hands are just as dirty as his.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I understand that this is the pretense of a show that is for African Americans. I think I could be wrong. every other group in America has their own show, and I'm assuming this is one for African Americans. And I think that we really need to have an adult conversation about these things, mm-hmm. and stop patronizing each other about what's really going on, and about the political fallout that will happen as a result of so many people getting this confused, convoluted information.
All we can do is just keep doing our research, bringing up topics that make a difference, encouraging people to read other sources and talk to each other.
And don't forget one other thing, too, also, Celeste. All we can do is be adult and handle these situations, and not handle the situation with kid gloves to such a degree that we lose the context behind what's being said. And that's what's been going on across all of media right now.
Yeah, well, that's true.
Sitting down and saying, look, let me talk to you like an adult, instead of patronizing people like they're 11-year-olds. That's basically what's going on. So, yes, Cecil, you're right. It's sickening. But I think this thing is going to lead to a much deeper understanding of how politics is working and how certain groups have been thrown under the bus and are being used as political fodder. The African-American descendants of slaves specifically, because no one wants to sit down and have an adult. And having adult conversations, Cecil and Celeste,
mm-hmm.
not necessarily easy.
No, it's not.
They're difficult.
That's true.
Okay, so I'll just leave that at that, and great job. Keep going.
All right, but thanks for calling.
Thank you, Cody, for your wisdoms and your words this morning. Let's continue our adult conversation with Lou. Good morning, Lou.
Good morning.
Hey, how are you?
It's Monday. We're here.
Well, that's good. So it sounded like what you've touched on so far has been Roger Stone, Tom Brokaw, and what did you say, Celeste? The transmogrification of politics and culture. The voracious.
Yeah, that's what we do when somebody says somebody should be more American. You know, my question is, well, what exactly do you mean? Because American culture is based on an amalgamum of other cultures. Our language is based on the only harder language to learn is Mandarin Chinese, I remember. than English, because we have words we've taken from other languages and then we turned it into something totally different, so that if you have somebody who speaks Spanish come to town and they want to say, well, I went to Alameda. No, we want to correct them and say, it's Alameda. Mm-hmm.
So in school, Celeste, it sounded like maybe you were a double major, journalism and Mandarin, or no?
No, you don't hear any Mandarin falling out of my mouth correctly, unless I really sweat bullets to get there. I would love to speak it, but I don't.
Yeah, sure.
But the whole thing about Tom Brokaw is just part of a topic that
sounded like you were surprised about the Tom Brokaw comment, because you said he was an icon before.
Well, when I read it yesterday, I was a little stunned, but then I got to thinking, oh right, he's a white man who earns a certain amount of money, and he's in the media, so he's probably insulated from reality, even though he broadcasts the news.
Well, it also raises the question, though, of, partly Nixon's old gang, Roger Stone, is part of Trump's gang, how Trump actually got in with, the Electoral College, even though Hillary was 3 million votes ahead.
Right.
But my question, I had a couple of questions. One was
let me say this before you get to your question, because
no,
it might change him. The reason Brokaw was mentioned, well, see, I haven't had a chance to unfold my topic.
Sure,
my
sure.
topic's not Tom
unfold,
Brokaw.
Unfold.
Okay. My topic is how we are starting to cut off avenues of communication by being so thin-skinned and paranoid here in America that we insist that people have to speak English, and that speaking English in public is one of the paramount examples of assimilation, but it's also being used as an excuse to further isolate people who would be part of our culture, who would assimilate if we weren't treating them bad other ways.
Sure. Well, it's like building a metaphorical wall as opposed to Trump saying allegedly that he wants to create the wall.
Mm-hmm.
I assume Cecil may remember S.I. Hayakawa, who was
the
only guy, or Celeste as well. So my question is going to be about local language versus assimilation. I assume, and you can tell me
language.
If both of you are following it or not, but some of us from Portland State went to City Council a week ago or so, and Joanne Hardesty had an article which was basically in the Portland Observer, about white privilege, white male privilege. And that's basically what she said at City Council as well. But and it got printed in The Observer, which has some distribution. I think it's a good paper. Willamette Week, however, printed a bunch of critiques that came in on email of what she said. And it was basically nobody identified per se as MAGA hat wearers, but they appeared to all be white men who took total umbrage that Joanne allegedly was trashing, I guess, poor white men or working class white men, apparently, who gave Trump lots of votes, non-educated white men, and that they seem to not get the idea of, white privilege or privilege to start with. So I guess my question for both of you then would be, and I'll let you go, is do you think that the whole notion of white privilege or white male privilege at this point is kind of, an academic or a radical left idea that hasn't really percolated into the Tom Brokaw, Roger Stone mainstream media? So I think that's a question. Thanks
okay,
for doing the program.
That's a good question. You know, I know Cecil's got something to say, so I'm going to defer to him first.
The phone rang.
Oops. Yeah.
And I forgot what I was going to say. So
well, okay, so Lou, I have had an occasion to do some, I call it anti-oppression training for the radio station, and some, I guess we'll call it horizon broadening for other groups, and dealing with this whole thing of white male privilege. Now, I have met the woman Peggy McIntosh, the professor. I met her and had long conversations with her, both in Washington, D.C. and here in Portland when she came. So that whole unpacking the backpack is something that I resonate with when I'm trying to explain this whole idea of white male privilege. And I start out with a little story, and I'll say it this way, and you tell me what you think. My father's father was a white man. He was Irish from Dublin, okay? But he wasn't the right white because he was an Irishman. And Irishmen, along with dogs and black men or black people, were considered pretty much on par with each other, okay? A woman whose name is Martha Stewart went to jail for insider trading. It's something that all rich people do to one level or another, maybe not as the level that got her incarcerated, but the fact is she got incarcerated and had to go to jail. Okay, even though Martha Stewart was a rich white person with lots of education and connections, she still wasn't the right white male. She wasn't male. Okay, then you have Kenneth Lay. For people who don't know Kenneth Lay, he was a highly paid executive with Exxon. Exxon is an oil company that spilled oil all over the place and has committed other crimes. Most specifically, one of their crimes is having employed Condoleezza Rice. Okay, that was my own little quip. I'm done. Anyway, my point being, Kenneth Lay got subpoenaed. But as you can probably guess, I'm going to say something slightly conspiratorial. I believe he told people, if I go down, some of you are going down too. And because he has some very cozy connections in Congress, and they were on both sides of the aisle, he was able to craft a deal. Now, I've been in the military. I was an information officer. I was trained in journalism. I'm suspicious anyway by nature. I don't believe he necessarily is dead. I believe he was part of the witness protection program. Okay, you can laugh at me if you want. We all have our little things. Cecil's about to fall out of his seat like, no, she didn't say that. I do. I believe he's part of the witness protection program. Okay, and that's because I've met people who put people in witness protection program. I got to learn that. Okay, so my thought is, okay, this was close to the right white man, but he was still subpoenaed, and he still had to make a deal. Okay, now, who's the right white man? Well, I'm going to say his name rather than question. Dick Cheney. Dick Cheney can shoot a man in the face, have that man come on TV, and apologize for getting in the way of the bullets. That is power. Dick Cheney was not found during the so-called 9/11 attack. He was hidden. He was safe. Any military person will tell you, you hide the leader. You protect the head. Okay, where was Bush Jr.? He was on TV. He wasn't protected. He was Air Force One. He wasn't protected. So when you look at power from a very common sense point of view, you can say anecdotal even, and you look at how power is, there are a lot of white men who feel they're not getting power where they're just not the right white men. And that's why it's hard to talk to a lot of the people. If you come to them with that assertion, without knowing who they are and what they represent and where they come from, you're going to miss connecting with them. One thing, you won't be speaking the same English.
And one thing I wanted to say is I think it's a sign of the change in times, and you would not have had that conversation in City Hall a few months ago. Now with most of the city council, I think 3 of the 5 are women, and the conversation about white male privilege would not have taken place in the way it had not a black woman said those words. So I think it's important to have that type of diversity in different voices, because you have different ways in which issues are addressed in new ways. Lou, you've been silent. You have you know, there's a couple of people waiting to say.
Oh, he's off.
Oh, Lou's gone?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So let's go. Before we go to our next call, let me remind you that you're listening to KBOO FM. This is More Talk Radio. Following this program will be the OMO Variety Hour at 9, at 10, Locus Focus with Barbara Bernstein, who speak with the author of There Are Strains. These are strange times, my dear. Field Notes from the Republic. At 11, it's Disability Awareness. 11:30, Voices for the Animals. And all these KBOO cable programs are brought to you, made possible by member support. Go to KBOO.FM and click on Donate. John, thank you for your patience.
Yes, thank you.
Well, this is a little bit off topic, but I'm just listening a little bit to Democracy Now. Mm-hmm. If people want to give a little bit more visual thing about what this Cohen guy is.
Yeah. Roy.
There was a movie that was made, God, I guess it's been about 35 years now. It was called Citizen Cohen.
Oh, it hasn't been 35 years, has it?
Well,
I've seen I've seen the movie. It was great.
Yeah, with James Wood.
Yes, it was. I think it was HBO.
But the irony, the whole thing, James Wood is a Trump supporter.
Yes.
So I'm just sort of like here. He depicts a character who's you know how actors and actresses are. They sometimes they'll portray, you know, people
close that, to the home.
Yeah, well, that whatever. But the movie itself, I don't know how. Maybe Netflix might have it, or you could Google it, or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Find it at the library.
Excellent movie.
Yes.
I was just kind of. Well, I shouldn't say I was laughing, but it was just so. I thought it was ridiculous, but it was true. But the opening scene.
James Wood played Roy Cohen.
Yes.
Rosenberg getting fried.
Yes.
On the chair. Mm-hmm. God, that was just like I sit there, look, you know, whatever. But anyway. If people want to really know how much of a person this Cohen was, or, you know,
little of a person he was.
Well, yeah, no. I mean, but, you know, like, well, but anyway, I'm glad that another, you know, comment has come out about this Cohen guy.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's all I have to say. Just that Citizen Cohen, James Woods.
Okay,
yes,
thank you.
It's worth it.
And, you know, sometimes I'm not surprised that James Wood would play Roy Cohen. He's like the perfect type. I mean, just
yes.
Because of his politics, libertarian, well, transactional. Yeah. Okay.
Good, I like you good cleaned casting. It up and called it transactional because I think many times that's a libertarian stance.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I'm being a little harsh, but I find it to be more transactional than actually regular politics. I don't know what another way to say that. We're on the radio. 503-231-8187. Go to James. Good morning.
Good morning. You know, I think I was thinking about Tom Brokaw's comments, and you know, the one thing that really stands out to me is that, you know, he keeps saying, you know, I wish they would make a harder effort at assimilation.
Yeah, what does that mean?
Well, I'll tell you what it means. What it means is, like, why won't they, you know, it's about the... It's about the lie, you know, about,
mm-hmm.
you know, because it's really difficult to explain, but, you know, the, basically when it comes down to it, you know, we have tried and, you know, and it all goes back to the original not recognizing of the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo, mm-hmm. when the war was lost, they made a treaty with Mexico that all the Mexicans on this side of the American border were going to be given the freedom that we were supposed to be given, but
yes.
they never gave it to us, you know, and so, you know, for over 100 years, you know, they treated, you know, the United States has treated us like, you know, has treated my people like garbage, and it's no different than them not honoring any other native treaty that they've made.
That's true.
You know, and this whole idea of assimilation, you know, it comes down to the fact that, you know, Hispanic, first off, is terrible. Hispanic is about being part of Spain.
Yes.
Right.
In reality,
yeah.
Many of us are Chicanos, which is, you know, we understand that we have occupied DNA, which means they will always be a part of us, but we will never be a part of them.
Well, here's the thing that really bothers me, and that's because I'm Native American, too, and
yeah.
not like Elizabeth Warren. Mexicans, that's a misnomer because you're Native Americans.
Yes.
You're indigenous people. See, we can call somebody indigenous when they're over in Australia, but we don't want to call the people who are on these two continents indigenous because that might cost us something. You know, we're gonna lose some real property or some political clout or some money or something. And that really that gets me.
Oh, well, absolutely. Well, it's because it comes down to sovereignty. You make treaties with sovereign nations.
Right.
So the idea of them recognizing Mexico and our people as a native people would mean that they would have to give us those sovereign rights, which would include having to give back.
Right.
Which they have taken. And it's like the whole idea. Assimilation just essentially means, like, why can't we be more, you know, why can't we give into the power structure? And the truth of the matter is that we've tried. Even one of our greatest heroes, Cesar Chavez, as much as I admire him and his work, he was all about assimilation. He was a part of the whole idea that we should be American before Mexican, but even that didn't save him. So this idea that we need to assimilate and to become more like the United States, it's absolutely ridiculous because we've tried. It's like them saying, why do black people have to be so lazy? Why don't they get up off their butts and try? It's like, have you heard of the Tulsa race riots? Have you heard of, you know, it's like, how many times has the black community tried to build itself up? Probably about the same amount of times as the Chicano Mexican community. But it's not the idea that they want us to assimilate. It's the idea that they want us to be obedient.
Well,
You're not supposed to look for any equal status. And that's the thing that's the real problem, is you cannot have equal status.
I think a symbol of what you're saying, James, for me, is the, remember the conversation by our present president denouncing the former president Barack Obama by questioning whether or not he is an American.
Mm-hmm.
And that, exactly, I think is symbolic of, mm-hmm, of the problem that you are highlighting with us.
Exactly. It has nothing. I mean, you know, it's like me, like I'm third generation Mexican, in the, you know, Native American, and it doesn't matter how well I speak English. It's about how I look. It's about my willingness to assimilate. It's about my willingness to uphold the lie. Because, you know, we just had this conversation. I called you guys before when we were talking about, you know, celebration of non-American holidays.
Oh yeah, right.
And it comes back to that whole idea of, like, it doesn't maintain the lie.
Right.
You know, they want us to believe that, you know, that Native Americans essentially just gave up land so that the settlers could be here, but they don't want to talk about, you know, like the pox blankets and,
right, the Trail of Tears,
and the killing off of the buffalo
and the schools,
and the schools where they, you know, people don't realize that genocide isn't just physical, it's spiritual, it's cultural. There's so many parallels between, you know, people who are occupied. And that is essentially what Native Americans are. Whether we're south or north of the border, we are occupied. And the sooner that people realize that, the sooner we can start having real conversations about what equity and justice look like. Because, you know, it's like a, you know, Martin Luther King say, you know, a lot of people are interested in negative peace, which is the absence of tension, but not positive peace, which is the presence of justice. Because justice means that you have to repair. You know, Malcolm X would say, you know, it's like, it's not enough to just pull the knife out of the wound. You have to suture it. You have to heal. And all the,
you have to clean
all
it.
America,
right,
has done in the last 100 years is just pull the knife out just enough.
Yes.
And you know, and our attempts to try and heal ourselves have just torn open new wounds.
Yeah.
Well,
so it's,
I was going to say thank you for the call and reminding us that there's more work to be done, and even some of what the work is. And thank you so much for your call, James.
No problem. Have a great day.
You too. You are listening to More Talk Radio on your Community Connection, KBOO Portland. The phone number is 503-231-8187 to speak to either Cecil or myself, Celeste, here on More Talk Radio. And who do we have on?
Jenny.
Good morning, Jenny.
Good morning.
How are you?
You know, I'm well, thank you, and I hope you guys are well, too. Thanks for the show. You know, in my view, this is like a juvenile expression of, you know, kind of petulant, you know. Mm. Well, you know, well, how about you go to India or China if you want that kind of food? Instead of, you know, we demand all this, you know, diversity in our diet, in our food, and all of this stuff. And yet, in order to get it, you have to make these people speak English. It's just to me, it's the height of arrogance, you know, to say, well, you know, I really want to order my Mexican food in English. You know what I'm saying?
Yes,
that's
I
really
do.
What this is about.
Yes, I do.
It's just, you know, it's just, to me, it's just disgusting. How about we just save your money that you earn from all your transactions and go to China instead of paying $5 here and having to figure out how to order it from the people who serve it to you and make it for you and sustain you.
Hmm. Well,
it's just ridiculous. I mean, look around Portland. How many different? How about we go have a hamburger every day? How about let them eat cake?
Okay.
These white people. Well, I'm white, but, and I'm sorry to kind of go off here,
no.
But
No.
You know, it's really that ridiculous. They want to order their food in English from all countries all over the world. It's an inconvenience for them and embarrassing to them to have to figure out the menu.
Yeah.
You know, it's just that idea that it's just inconvenient for their ways. And Tom Brokaw, you know, he's my generation. Yeah. You know, he can go away.
Yes, he can go away.
Like AOC said, you know, there's a new party. Who dis?
I totally agree.
Thank you so much for the show.
Hey, thank you so much, Jenny. Earlier, Celeste, you shared with me a comment about language in terms of, could you share with the viewers in terms about if how many languages you speak?
Okay, I think I got this from an article. It was in the I think the Washington Times, the Washington Post. I mean, this particular article was about two American women were detained in Montana by a Border Patrol agent after he heard them speaking Spanish, not after he saw them committing a crime or had any evidence or reason to think, probable cause, I believe is what they call that they might be committing a crime, but solely because in the state of Montana, they were speaking Spanish. Now, nobody hardly speaks Spanish in Montana, he said. And I'm thinking for, you know, except that is the name of the state. It's a Spanish word. It means mountain. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it was said that people who speak two languages are bilingual. People who speak more than two languages are either trilingual or multilingual. However, people who speak only one language are Americans. And the funny thing about it is you got to make sure you speak American, because depending on who I'm talking to, I don't speak American.
Well,
what is speaking American and what is it going to get us? You know, the whole thing is this. We talk about, and talk is even a joke to say that. We talk about how we need to get along, how we need to understand each other. And the right is just as guilty of talking about assimilation and all that as the left is. And left, yes, you are. You're guilty. You want people to assimilate too. Don't act like you don't. But here's the thing that gets me. What language? I mean, for real. And when we pick a language and I come to visit you, Do I park my car in the garage? You know? Are we going to go to the valley? Is that, you know, like the Willamette Valley? Are we going to have champagne? You know, is there going to be a kerfluffle if I don't speak English? You know, and I'm using all these words just to demonstrate how in English, American English, we take voraciously, but we don't want to give back anything. And we have a culture that is based on what the elite have decided we should do, or we steal aspects of culture from indigenous people or from black people. And so we don't have a real culture, and we deny everybody the opportunity to explore ways that their culture dovetails and mixes with ours naturally and gives us a natural point of discussion.
Well, it does. Let's.
But I want somebody to talk. Tell me if you don't think don't think that's true.
Our numbers here are 503-231-8187.
Let's go to our next caller.
Mike, are you there? Mike? Good morning.
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, you know, when people speak against people speaking English, they don't understand that, first of all, part of the power in America is in the language. And if you think not learning English is important, then go to court. They use language to put people in legal predicaments. And so anybody that try to denigrate someone learning English is not very bright. The Native Americans all say they learn in part behind language. People today get in legal jams in part behind language, so it's very important.
I'm sorry, I didn't.
Is that black people are always fighting for other people that don't need to fight. Mexicans are more financially upper mobile than black people. You have Mexican restaurants on every corner. I think you may have one black restaurant in Oregon. And yet, whenever there's protests, white people will go out and fight for everybody. But Mexicans don't even go out and fight in protest because they don't have to. They got everybody else doing it. They're out taking your job.
So
anyway, I'll talk to you later.
Okay, Mike. I didn't want you to hang up because I wanted you to...
He didn't want to talk to you.
But I wanted to hear more of what he was saying. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. Part of it was what I had difficulty hearing him.
Mm-hmm. But too much static. Well, you know, first, don't say Mexicans don't do, because you don't know what every Mexican does. And I mean, that's a basic thing that we ought to not do.
Well, even larger, I mean, this whole thing, I mean, I have a concern about the whole grouping of people. So we say anyone south of the borders, we have a, you know, very convenient Mexican. So they're mm-hmm. all Mexicans. Or we might be feeling great and say Hispanics. And mm-hmm. it's not realizing the diversity of different cultures and nations
and languages and groups of people.
So we are very lazy in many ways. And perhaps that's part of the problem. It's easier just to group people, to make generalizations, rather than to get to understand and know one another, because that takes time. It's just,
well, the basic thing that it takes is a common language. And so people would say, well, that's why I would argue for English. Okay, what? A common language is helpful, but we don't have a common language in English. English is made up of words from more than half a dozen different languages. And I don't mean because, you know, it's Anglo-Saxon language. I mean, it has words in Latin. It has Asian words in it. It has words of Polynesian origin. It has words of Dutch origin. It has words of Russian origin. I mean,
And even the fact that you say English, are you speaking Australian English? Are you speaking Canadian
English?
English,
Caribbean English. I mean, there you go. And so, you know, my concern is that we stop worrying about what language people are speaking around us and start seeing if we are emoting honestly about welcoming them, being a welcoming person. And it can start with an individual. I mean, I had a very good friend of mine who's a black man. And we fell out. We didn't stop having friendship, but I mean, we had a big argument because I got mad at him because he wanted these people to speak English who were having a conversation at a bus stop. And I said, well, were they talking to you? And he says, no. I said, then why do they have to speak English? Well, I don't want them to, they might be talking about us. And? I said, and? I mean, it's not like people don't talk about me in front of my face all the time anyway. I'm a person of color. It happens. The media talks about us. So, you know, with thin skin, and when black people buy into that, I want to first address an underlying, unresolved, and unrequited need of recognition. And that one of the biggest challenges to black Americans being open-minded, and as Mike said, fighting for other folks, is that we feel like nobody is fighting for us. And he even said that, well, Mexicans don't fight for us. Well, I've seen and been around some of my friends or people in marches who did, okay? And some of the marches I've been to, you know, labor actions or political actions or social actions, I've seen Mexican people, you know, and some of them were South American people. And some of them were Spanish. But here's my point. One of the reasons we do go for other folks is because we are relational. American blacks are relational people, okay? So we do look forward to having a relationship with somebody, but it should be predicated on equality and honesty, among other things. My understanding is that he feels like our needs are not being met. And so why are we fighting for everybody else? Well,
and I think that can be a intentional, productive conversation,
right?
In terms of how people feel, and especially when people have been oppressed, and there's that sense, especially there's a sense in which one feels as the Mike said, that other people are getting ahead of, you know, you fill in the blank.
Right.
And so constantly there's that struggle among oppressed people to find commonality and to struggle together against to overthrow the society in which that type of thing continues to live. We have a few minutes here. You're listening to KBOO, More Talk Radio. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. And we have Job on the line.
Good morning.
Yes, good morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
So what's on your mind, Job?
Look, I was just listening to your radio, and remind me of your name. I didn't catch your name.
Me? I'm Celeste.
Yes, Celeste. Well, kind of my interest was, and I think you were kind of going on the right path, and then the gentleman, Michael, called in, and then it seems like it got a little, first of all, I'm Mexican. I am, I speak Spanish and English, and I do medical interpreting, too, so I kind of help Spanish speakers. But what I'm calling about is, what you guys are talking about right now is that why should people not learn English? And I think that it's important that if you're going to be in a different country, no matter where you're at, that at least you try to learn that language. Doesn't mean that you have to use it,
right?
But it's gonna get you a lot farther
in life and in that country, and it's going to make you come ahead. It's going to open more doors. And I think where Michael was going, where he's saying, why should they? And I can say this about the Mexican community, that a lot of them, a lot of times, do not want to come out and do not want to participate in the political process. Now, people are going to argue and say, well, yeah, you have all these people coming out of marches, but those are mainly like the younger generation, like the ones that were born here, but like people that are native of Mexico, they're not going to believe in the process. And my thinking is always like, well, if you're going to come to this country because you're looking for a better life, a better future, and so you have to participate no matter what, whether it's here in this country or in your own country, right? And I think that's where people from different countries get it wrong, is that's what makes this country great, is that you have the right to participate.
I agree with you, Joe. I agree that participation is critical. Therefore, learning the language is critical, and also the success that you mentioned. I would move more for people being bilingual, but I believe that when you're in public, you have the right to speak whatever language you want to speak, as long as you are participating fully. You're right. There are people, and I've been to places in San Francisco where I would go into a shop and nobody spoke English. Everybody spoke Chinese and a small dialect of Chinese too. So, I mean, you got a point, but my point is that we're being very thin-skinned here in America when we say that you have to speak English, when you have Border Patrol stopping two Latinas in Montana because they're speaking Spanish. We've lost a sense of what assimilation is going to get people. Because if you feel assimilation is not going to get you anything, why would you assimilate? If you feel that it's going to lead to more lack of respect, I don't know. What do you think?
No, I think I agree with you that, and I think that there was there's been proven cases of people losing their identity because they try to assimilate completely, and then in the end they're told that they're just not American because they're not white. So I get that, and I get that nothing's going to be fair, but at least you have to try for yourself to at least tell yourself at the end of the day, hey, look, I'm trying. I'm learning this language, I'm getting ahead, and I'm looking for the opportunities that I came looking for in this country.
And I think most people who come to this country come with that attitude, and I think for every people, as they make the transition with their children, there's ways in which each generation build upon the lessons of the others. And part of, I think, what people fear is not that people will learn English, but that people who have lived in this country all their lives might learn something else about other cultures. And that's a fear.
Yeah. Like we would have to learn about other people. And I'm hoping that we will continue to share our languages and make the United States of America truly a welcoming place where, you know, you can say welcoming or bienvenidos or whatever, and people smile and wave instead of saying speak American. You know, and be American needs to change. It needs to adopt as much as we say people need to adapt. So I don't know. I hope to see you, and when I do, I'm going to say hola.
Thanks again. And like I also like to say, just remind us that for me, I'm constantly reminded that no matter how hard you try to assimilate, you can even be president of the United States
and then you're still not counted.
And you're still not accepted. So
I did say adopt. All right. Well, adopt KBOO as your radio station. 90.7 in the metro area, 91.9 in all points east, 104.3 in points south, and everywhere on the world wide web, it's KBOO.FM. Thank you.
Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 29th Annual Cascade Festival of African Films from Friday, February 1st through Saturday, March 2nd. The Cascade Festival of African Films represent different countries and cultures and a range of lifestyles from pre-colonial to modern times, including both rural and urban settings. Films include Razzia, a film from Morocco, and more at the Hollywood Theater, and Wale from Burkina Faso, Fig Tree from Ethiopia, shorts from emerging African filmmakers, and many more at the Moriarty Arts and Humanities Building, Room 104, at the PCC Cascade Campus, 705 North Killingsworth Street in Portland. Again, that's the 29th Annual Cascade Festival of African Films from Friday, February 1st through Saturday, March 2nd. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Golden Years in the Red on Tuesday, January 29th at 5:30 p.m. at the Multnomah County Central Library in Portland. Golden Years in the Red with Student Debt will feature informational speakers and people who will share their stories about debt, including garnishment of Social Security checks for student debts when grandparents and parents co-sign student loans. Again, that's Golden Years in the Red on Tuesday, January 29th at 5:30 p.m. at the Central Library, 810 Southwest 10th Avenue in Portland. More information.